The Find by Rosalind Minette. Dirk wasn't aware of making a prediction. "We'll be back in time for your exams," his parents called, waving goodbye at Edmonton Airport security. "You'll never will," he grinned, expecting them to party with their international colleagues after the Earth Sciences Conference. And indeed they weren't back in time, or at all, but fragmented into space together with their plane. Because Dirk hadn't seen the mid-air collision, it didn't seem real. He'd been doing his homework when Mrs. Watson, red-faced, hurried in and hugged him, while Mr. Watson, lumbering behind her, said, "Prepare yourself, son." The hug alone announced disaster. Their words describing the tragedy hung in the air almost visibly and remained like beings in their own right. Gentle traffic noise outside the house continued its hum. The dog went on panting. The walls remained the same colour. But the mug of tea soon placed before Dirk tasted of dirt. When the Watsons' two sons got home, their usual noise quelled to the kind of silence called deadly. Radio and television remained switched off. Soon the quietness of the home pressed around Dirk's head, almost blinding him. His homework books were open on the table, just as before, so it seemed most natural to continue on until his evening meal was brought to his room to allow him privacy. In the following days, the study routine was his mainstay. The Watson boys treated Dirk with a paralysed kindness, passing him the best cakes, with arms at their furthest extent. They lent him their treasures, Xbox, magazines, books, bomber jacket, but kept the distance of those who fear contamination. They became uncommonly polite to their parents and somewhat clingy. Eventually, Dirk realised that the lack of radio and television was to protect him from news coverage. He didn't allow himself to imagine the aftermath of the collision, and at school friends were careful to only discuss basketball, hockey and EDM in front of him. Late at night he heard the Watsons' muttered conversation about who and where he should go to. Left in trust, hardly our responsibility really, but we can't just pass him over to social services. His grandparents will have to... A terror gripped Dirk around his middle. Of course the Watsons would need to be shot of him, but where could he go? One grandmother was in a care facility, and the other grandparents lived in England. He'd only met them twice. The funeral was timed around their arrival, flanked by grief-stricken grandparents, while academic colleagues Dirk didn't know gave valedictions meaningless to him. This hour of trauma felt like life on another planet. Of course, the grandparents offered Dirk a home in England. Of course, he refused. He'd only ever lived in Canada, and his exams were only just ahead. Changing his school would... He had no words to explain how it would destroy him to leave. That school, those teachers, the routine was what kept him functioning at all. He dreaded having to leave the neutrality of the Watson home. Manfully, the Watsons hung on until legal matters were finalised. Dirk inherited the house, claiming wildly, "I'm 15, pretty self-sufficient." The grandparents recruited a housekeeper to live in and care for Dirk under the Watson supervision. "Until you come to England." 2 years passed, and he chose not to go anywhere. This was a nothing time outside of study. Dirk couldn't hang out with friends without feeling his essential difference, the absence of parental support. Well before graduation, he stopped wanting to hang out at all. Since his parents died, as he must accept they had, Dirk spent hours scanning the sky, It seemed the nearest guide to their present whereabouts. Only the Watsons could celebrate his high school diploma, or they suggested he follow his parents' profession. But earth sciences offered less relevance to him than skyward ones, while their specialism, sustainable air quality, clearly hadn't sustained them, so how could it sustain him? Astronomy, then! You're always looking at the sky! But it wasn't what was up in space that captivated Dirk, but what came down. He opted for a geology degree. Where? He fancied somewhere unpeopled. Arizona, where his application to the state university was successful. He let the Watsons rent out his home and made a silent pact with himself. He wouldn't come back until he had found... He didn't know what, but it had to be life-changing. He needed something that represented what he had lost, something that no one else had or could have. Until he possessed such a thing, he would always feel some vital part of him was missing. He packed a mean suitcase, clothes, textbooks, and one photograph. Driving seemed preferable to flying, though it took him 3 days. Dirk drove south to explore the land of inhospitable deserts and dramatic landscapes. Arizona. Immediately, the vastness of the place, the outstretched and unimaginable terrain, seemed to embrace him. Starting university meant another set of peers whose excitement at tasting independence from their parents set Dirk apart, just as a missing family life had separated him from school friends. The uni was renowned for partying. At weekends and holidays, he explored alone, reasoning that this way he'd absorb more information. Arizona's canyons, deserts, rock formations, caves, colours, the very light spoke to him in a way that people could not. During his final degree year, Dirk's interests narrowed to studying those cosmic elements that fell to Earth. After graduation, the rapidly increasing demand for freshly fallen meteorite material presented career opportunities. He joined a state university team analysing stony fragments, often the size of a pea or a grain of sand. For inspiration, Dirk visited the exhibits at the Meteorite Museum. One knobbly, dark chondrite had been sectioned to reveal a world of beauty under the electron microscope. The skeletal crystals inside a single chondrule resembled an aerial view of blocks of flats. Dirk could detect 8 different colours, clustered like jewels randomly but in close proximity. He imagined them cities, houses within cities. There was no description of how this chondrite was found, nor the drama of finding it. To have been there at the find. The information stated its age, 500 million years older than the most ancient terrestrial rocks. This relic of material from our solar system and beyond, eons before, had gathered fragments of other worlds on its idle journey. Its final, fiercely fiery flight to Earth had fused the internal elements as close as a mother's embrace. Dirk peered at the piece until his eyes ached, gazing until the museum lights dimmed and the attendant muttered that it was closing time. Here began a fever of longing that Dirk took silently into his first years of work. Life at the university felt too safeguarded, too cosy for internal comfort. He preferred the Spartan huts of the field stations. Professor Condor led occasional meteorite excursions to well-known strewn fields. Passionate amateur hunters, often ex-Marines or retirees, joined them. Dirk only felt able to relate to the engineer, Treville. He'd survived throat cancer, but his voice had not. Dirk's chosen silence alongside Treville's enforced one allowed close concentration when, heads down, the hunter's trek into the empty landscape began. On the strewn field, even tiny fragments showed a distance away, black against the sandy expanses. Some hours in, Dirk saw Treville spy one, for his measured gait changed to an urgent run. As Condor verified the fragment as chondrite, the sheer bliss on Treville's face moved something inside Dirk's guts. For the others, the search was a diversion. For Dirk, a necessity. Most working hours, he was recording the finds of others. To find a meteorite himself, a piece of matter that came involuntarily from the skies, would spell the return of something rightfully belonging to him. When eventually he made such a find, he didn't intend to share it. These excursions added search techniques to Dirk's growing expertise in analysis. Before long, he began searching alone. Any find had to be solitary. Company would reduce its significance. For months and years, even without a notable find, he persevered, his search fever sustaining him as time passed. In Arizona, late June, dry grasses bake in relentless sun. The wind picks up, clouds start rolling in. Cumulus thunderheads darken the sky until the first quenching drops of rain begin. The monsoon season arrives. Dirk planned his next trip for immediately after its end. With the remains of damp wind in the air, he parked illicitly and laced his boots ready to tramp a crater, closed to the public. The site of an ancient fall. The surface sand had dried, but areas under the boulders at the base showed damp residue. He scrambled way down, past the uneven surface for some hours, alert for any fragment. Suddenly, he spotted a depression that could mark a fall. He ran to the spot and poked in his coloured marking rod. Pulling out his folding shovel with its attached magnet, he dug deep down until he felt the contours of a mass. Difficult to separate from its clay surrounds, he could sense its weightiness, and it held to the magnet. A meteorite. Gradually, his knife pared clay away from the piece. It was the size of his knee. Thumb-sized depressions around its shiny black surface, a sure sign of fusion crust. Maneuvering it near to the surface, Dirk ground an edge with his diamond file to check its composition. Surely rare, carbonaceous chondrite. He knelt still, hardly breathing. His moment had come. He looked to the sky and then to the crater's rim, recognizing himself as a tiny spot on the Earth's surface. Then slowly he pulled his meteorite free, covering it quickly within the specimen bag to protect it from earthly moisture. He should use his GPS, photograph and record the find properly. But the meteorite was his. He had found it alone, even if illicitly on this spot. He had not searched all these years to share his find. He would put it in a lined metal box in his bedroom and only ever show it to... But he had no one to show his treasure. There had been no one all these years. What sense his mission now? Holding the specimen bag to his eye level, Dirk imagined its sections, the myriad specks of other worlds compressed into its form. He stood, sweat pouring from his cap like lava from a volcano. For years he had waited and worked for this moment of possession. But now he'd gained it. A new need had arrived. To share. He looked back at the sky and the rim of the crater as if for guidance. Was he retrieving his personal meteorite? or stealing a precious exhibit from its rightful destiny in the State Museum? To a rational professional, the answer was clear. He had been a persevering thief to no good purpose. His find was empty of celebration. He put his precious cargo in his backpack, photographed his coloured marker, took some bearings, recorded the details for reporting back to the department. The meteorite was heavy on his back as he climbed back up the crater. His future was uncertain, but it would not lie in the earth or the sky. He had achieved his journey, a new career lay ahead. There were people he hadn't befriended, women he hadn't dated, children he hadn't created. Struggling, exhausted, to the crater's rim, Dirk stared down at the stark waste of the basin, emptied of its land a millennium before. For many years, he'd cruised such wide emptinesses alone, an unnamed mission in his heart. Now it was time to return home to Canada, to begin a peopled life. His first prediction had come true. His parents had not returned on time. His second would be a positive prediction, and he must make it come true. This revelation was his real find.